All right, guys, we'll go ahead and get started. I think we just got Jim in the back. He's finishing up the counting the money for today. Says Dick has a seat. But if you would bow with me, we'll have a word of prayer, and then we'll get going. Heavenly Father, we humbly come before you at this time, so thankful for this day, this Lord's Day that we've had to worship you. We pray that everything done was done in accordance with your will. And we ask at this time that you would be with us as men of this congregation as we make decisions about this congregation and your work, that you would guide us, give us wisdom, that the things done and said might be most beneficial to your kingdom. We ask that you would be with us, guide us, and we ask all these things to your Son's name. Amen. All right, so the first thing and that we'll look at, that the handout that I gave you, the finances, on the one side of the sheet is our just yearly, it's last year's numbers, and they're the yearly totals. And what I've done is just breaking that down into month, the monthly on the other side. So if you want to, on your own time, take some look at the yearly totals, you can. And if you have any questions, let me know. But what I want to focus in on is the monthly, to get into our budget just a little bit. There's a couple of discrepancies. Basically, like for example, we had the insurance stuff that we did with the building. And technically, the insurance money went into the contribution. So I subtracted that out to get our average contribution for the month. And then I also subtracted that out for the building maintenance, because that's what the category went under when we spent that $30,000 in repairs. So there were just a few things like that that so if you see some discrepancies there, and there might have been a couple mistakes I made, I'm certainly no accountant, but I think I've got it pretty much down to what we spend each month, 2020 on the left and then 2021 on the right. And what I would like to do, for time's sake, because we've got a couple other things to get to today, and that way it hopefully streamlines it and makes it go a little faster when we actually make the decisions, is to give you an idea of what we're looking at, give you my suggestions, and then some things to think about, and then you go home and think about them, and then we will actually make the decisions next time we meet. I think that would be the best way to do it. And of course, if you've got any questions between now and that time for me about the numbers specifically, and if you obviously have something to add, I'll give you all time in a minute to do that, that maybe I have not thought about, so that we all can think about it and then come back together next time to make the decisions on some of these things. And there's not a whole lot to decide. But basically, we have a surplus of about $3,400 a month, if you can see at the bottom right. And the way I came to that number between last year and this year, notice there's a difference between last year's surplus per month and this year. One thing that we've already done is we switched electricity providers. Should have done that a long time ago. I didn't realize that we were paying that much, or we could get that much of a break. We were paying about it was 13 cents per kilowatt. And we got it down to around five point something, I think. I can't remember the exact number. I have to look that up. But it's basically going to cut our electricity about in half. And so that's about $160 a month that we'll be saving on average. And again, these are averages throughout the year. Things like the electricity is much higher in July and August than it is this time of year. I also propose that we get rid of the $200 a month that we are paying for the alarm service. My alarm service is the company, and they're basically the ones that do the camera monitoring. But we don't use them at all. We're basically paying them for something that we don't use.
Yeah,
we need to have cameras, and we need to have a security system. But we can do that very cheaply on our own. And so that's something that I suggest we take out, and that would save $200 a month. And those are the main two things that would cut down on our expenses for the month, outside of what we have already been doing since we, kind of made our changes a couple years ago. We decided to clean the building ourselves, of course, and we're doing the lawn maintenance ourselves. And so all that cut a little bit, but this, these are some things that we could do that would help us to save quite a bit each month. And so, that's the main difference. And so suggestions for that extra $3,400 a month. And again, guys, this is just me thinking and my preference. I really honestly don't know what the best thing to do. We're not a business, so we're not trying to make money. But we also don't want to spend every dime we make and then our balance go lower and lower. We've got $115,000. I think that's more than enough in the bank. I don't think we necessarily need to stay right at that, but I don't know. Again, everybody's going to have a difference of opinion on where they get uncomfortable with that balance getting down to. So what I've proposed and what I was thinking, and again, this is for us all to decide, but the possibility of increasing our outside preacher support to $1,500 a month. And again, with that number is just a number I kind of threw out there. And the three men that I have on there, Dan Hash, Dennis Scroggins, and Mark Smith, the reason I put those is just because those are preachers that we've supported in the past. I think we mentioned this in a business meeting a while back, that when we do decide to start supporting some other men, we should probably look and see about the men that we were supporting before we had to cut them off because of the expense of it. And just check in. I did talk to Justin about Dan, and he is still needing support. We didn't talk any specifics or anything, but I'm assuming Dennis is. I know Dennis is still preaching some, but I need to talk to Josh Scroggins about him. And then Mark Smith, I'm not sure about. This is just what we were doing. So once we decide what amount we want to do, then we can get more into the who we want it to go to and who where the need is, that sort of thing. Also, I put increased local preacher support. That's kind of an awkward situation for me. I'm not necessarily saying that we should or need to, but I did want to just make y'all aware, and of course that's a decision that I would rather y'all make and think about and then just let me know. But I did want you to be aware of that situation. Dad's not had a raise since 2015. Normally just cost of living is what I'm basically thinking of. And so he's been paid the same. So that was something to throw out there. And then the benevolence. We mentioned the benevolence and having a set amount. And again, I don't think that needs to be overthought too much. Last year, if you look at the benevolence that we did have, that came out to about $362 a month. And so what I was thinking was just set aside $500 a month to use as needed. So there are always needs that arise. That doesn't mean that we can only use it and we can't use any more. If there is a unique situation, like the hurricane that came up a few years ago and the earthquakes in the Philippines, there are things that happen and we can always do more. But this is something that we have there, a number in the budget. And then at the end of the year, if we've used it, then, great. If we haven't used it, then we can take that money and actively go looking for something, or we can roll it over to the next year. I mean, there's a lot of different things that we can do with that, but just have that kind of set aside, and when needs arise, we know it's there, and just gives us kind of a number to go off of instead of just kind of throwing it out there and really not knowing how much we've been spending and how much we have to spend and that sort of thing. So, again, those are just my suggestions and what I've come up with doing the numbers and everything. Again, and I'm not adamant necessarily about any of them because I really don't have a basis for it. I think what I was thinking with what I added up there is having about $1,000 a month that we're under on the budget. In other words, that surplus being about $1,000 a month instead of $3,400, because that gives us the ability to do some other things with outside preacher support, benevolence and such, but it does give us that cushion. And again, our balance right now is right at $115,000. And so if we have If we look at it next year and our balance significantly went down because we were spending more, you know, we can always adjust it and that sort of thing. But I thought that might be a good place to start. And then the upcoming expenses that are kind of outside of the budget, we talked about getting a lawnmower, so that's coming up. And the $2,500, we might not spend that much. That was a number that I put out there that was a possibility. And then Dad's about to talk about the stuff for the audio visual equipment and setup that we talked about. And that's, I really didn't have a number to put for that yet. And so but that's another expense that we talked about that will be coming out that isn't necessarily in the budget. So hopefully that did more good than harm, and didn't just, you know, confuse everybody or make everybody think all kinds of things. But any questions about that or anything, Dad?
Yes. Just one thing to note. I don't know how much it will impact the difference in our numbers, but I did want you to know that the contribution in this past year, 2020, was artificially inflated just a bit because one of our members who will remain nameless because they desire to be so, but there was a little bit of a windfall to where extra was being put in. I don't know how significant that was. I do know it would be considered significant by many of us. But so our contribution, that's done.
Right.
That's over with. So it may be that the contribution may not be as high unless we, as a group, okay, and individually increase our own contribution.
And that's something that we can take a look at. And I thought about that, and also thought we've had several place membership the last half of the year. Also, since there's really no way to quantify that exactly, but that is something to think about. And that's why, again, that $1,000 cushion, and this is always adjustable, and we've got plenty of money in the bank to where it's not like if we overspend for a few months, we're in trouble, okay? I think that's a safe thing to use this for a year, and then we'll revisit it next year and make adjustments as we need. And if something big does happen, we can, of course, always make adjustments quickly if that is needed. Does anybody else have any questions or any thoughts about that? All right, again, so what I ask you to do is look at those suggestions. Again, specifically the outside preachers, the money for the preacher support for outside preachers and local preachers and benevolence, and those numbers. And, you know, think about that. Agree, disagree. Any suggestions to increase, decrease those numbers? When we meet next month, we can go from there. And if you do have some suggestions, go ahead and, you know, let me know before next month, and I can, you know, put it on the sheet and have it organized a little bit so that process will go a little quicker. And if you know of preachers that need support, I know they're out there. And so you may know of someone, and that's something that you can, you know, get that information. And again, if you know of someone, go ahead and be proactive in that. And since you're the one that knows them, call them and, you know, ask them about their situation. And if we decide to support them, we'll support them with what we can. But some, you know, if they just need $100 a month, or if they just need, you know, just kind of get an idea of what their needs are, that sort of thing. So that way we can have that information with us. Yes, Josh?
We're taking discussion of these suggestions to next month.
Yeah,
okay.
I just wanted to present the information, get it to you, and then let everybody think about it. That way we can hopefully, you know, instead of sitting here hashing it out all right now, because we got a couple other things to get to. And before I can move on, I forgot, it was requested by one of the women that's been listening to this, and nobody's done it today, so that's good. But just the sidebar conversations, I don't think anybody's been disrespectful at all, because you can understand us talking in here, but since they're listening, then if somebody's commenting over here while a couple are discussing something a little bit over there, it can be muffled. So that's one thing I made a mental note to mention before we started, and I didn't. Like I said, nobody's doing it today, so good job. But if we could keep that in mind because of those listening at home. All right, so if there's nothing else with that budget, then I'll let Dad go ahead and talk a little bit about the quote that he got, the estimate that he got for the audiovisual stuff.
This will be quick, simply because it's basically unusable for us. The guy that did the quote, he's a really great guy, but it was Friday night, and we were going through all that we could do, and their options, and all sorts of things. But I told Josh, and I think Dennis as well, you know, we kind of got
Model T going, and I kind of told him, you know, we'd like a dependable Chevy, and he gave us a Rolls Royce with this. So the actual estimate is $28,053.79. But it has basically, I think, industry standard equipment in every situation and circumstance that's way more than what we were thinking about. So I'm going to have to talk with him and reel him back in as far as the components. To show you, though, that he's certainly willing to work with us and he's hungry for the job, the labor that he's charging is $22 an hour. So that's not bad for that, you know, and with his expertise. And he'd be willing to come and train us and do all sorts of things. But anyway, there were some things that were mentioned. For example, the speakers were done incorrectly, and he could do speakers correctly, but that's a cost, or we could keep the speakers. He quoted, for some reason, and I'm not exactly sure, an audio microphone and stand, which I don't know that we have an extra need. Also a wireless mic, even though I told him we had a wireless mic already. So I'm thinking he's talking about these are all options, these are all top of the line stuff. But then even he quoted, since our computer that we would be using to run all this would be the computer under the pulpit wouldn't handle it. We would have to get another computer. And he quoted almost $4,000 for computer and peripherals, which would be basically, again, industry standard for audio-video complex that would be absolutely fantastic, and we would love it very much, except for the price tag. So that's what's happening. He's saying, this is the best, this is the best, this is the best, this is what would really work good for you. And I'm going to have to talk with him and say, no, that's not what I meant. That's not what we need. We need to use what we can from what we already have and be reasonable about the others, and we'll see where we go from there. And I'll have more information for you next month. But I did want you to know, I finally did get on it. I really like the guy. I am convinced that he would do a good job for us. But I got this quote at 8 o'clock this morning. And so I haven't had time to talk to him and to say, you know, this is not exactly what we're wanting. So, yes?
Would it be good for us to be considering some kind of a budget that we might want to have in mind? He went with 28.
That's another one of those expense. Like I said, I didn't have a specific number, so that's something to think about too. How much we want to spend on that? And again, if we decide that obviously $28,000 is way too much, but if we decide we just want to get a new computer and do the sound and maybe that's it, I don't know. That we could do it for significantly. We could upgrade some important components for significantly less than that, even if we decided that we didn't want to necessarily go with the whole blown thing that we were talking about earlier.
Now, he's really gotten a lot with regard to the equipment, but I do want you to know the $28,000 is somewhat misleading. For example, he talked about what's called a confidence monitor, which is basically what we have under the pulpit, which really doesn't work well for us. So I thought maybe we could get just a little, maybe 8-inch monitor up in the top right corner so that we can put our Bibles and notes and still see it. He says what a lot of churches do, they put a TV on the back wall. So he put that in, the TV on the back wall, even though it's probably not going to be used. He also mentioned the cost for labor and nice speakers heading this direction in the walls on each side, which is the way it should be done. And we could sell those, but we can still use those. And that was a couple of $1,000 total for that. And then in addition to that, for example, we talked about some of our members, such as Dick, that would, Dick's not coming on Wednesday nights because he can't understand well enough, but he puts earphones in his head and looks at the feed on the Facebook, and he can hear fine. He can hear Rick fine that way. So there are what are called, I know it's in front because I saw it, but basically for hearing impaired. And that was $650, but that's another option, for four headsets and the equipment to run it. So a lot of these things are optional. So I actually, just by looking at some things we would take off, I just very quickly scribbled out some things and knocked about $4,000 off of that. Just as that we'd be fine without doing, that, just $4,000. But I think, again, we could get much significantly below it. But anyway, so don't be too put off by the number, because the number is everything we could possibly want to have, what the preacher would love to have, is $28,000. But the preacher's not willing to spend that much. So that's
But yeah, again, balance is $115,000, so that would be an extra expense on top of our budget. So be thinking about a number. Again, that's, I mean, it's kind of arbitrary. It's tough for me to kind of really throw a number and know what would be.
I don't think we're going to be able to get below 10.
Below 10.
And do what we were talking about doing.
And see, kind of right at 10,000 was the number I had in mind. But again, that's just me.
That's just asking him for a stage estimate. They're like, hey, you know, let's get rid of the glass, get the new computer, but not the fanciest computer on earth, the direct line connection, you know, say, and then maybe a year later we do next stage, and a year later we do next stage.
That's something
he talked about.
Build it better like that. And then if we only ever do stage one, that's fine.
Yeah, I kind of thought that maybe some that there would be some of that in this estimate. But again, I didn't get the estimate until just now and didn't have a chance to work.
Yeah, that's something we can do as well in the stages. Okay, any questions, comments about that? Yes.
Well, I don't know all that he would put into a computer, but I know even now a $4,000 computer is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, I just gave Thackeray my old computer because I was blessed with another one. And it'll run circles around that thing all day long, every day, and through eternity.
Yeah.
So pretty much anything is going to be better than this.
Yeah.
But I know I can build a downright good one for $2,000 to $2,500.
Yeah, there's definitely some other options for computers to look at.
There's, we can work that out, is what I'm saying.
Right. All right, so then now I will turn. Dennis wanted to discuss some things with the men.
Sure. Brothers, there's an issue that's kind of come to mind over the past month or so, and I wanted to bring it to your attention. I do a lot better writing than I do speaking extemporaneously, so I spend many hours trying to put words together so I can communicate what it is that I want to say. So it's going to take me about 10 minutes to read this. So I ask you to bear with me. I'll try to get through it pretty quick. But listen carefully, okay? It's going to sound like I'm accusing a brother. I am not. It's the things I have to say is illustrative of the issue that will be revealed, okay? All right. It pains me personally to stand before you in this meeting. I have no stomach for delicate matters, but there are things that need to be said. I cannot ask Stan or any one of you to say them for me. Forgive my writing and anything I say that is wrong. Please bring such to my attention. I do indeed covet the wisdom and the ability of my brethren to see what I have not been able to see. Since my decision to reduce Donna's and my attendance to the 9 a.m. service, I have been hesitant to contribute to decision making. It is the primary reason why I was not at the last business meeting. I now see that was wrong. I missed out on an opportunity to talk about parliamentary procedure. That was a big disappointment. And that was also a weak effort to be lighthearted. Rick spoke Wednesday before last about the importance for each of us to be willing, like Paul, to stand up and confront Peter when the situation warrants it. So this is kind of what I'm doing. He had a good lesson in Bible class. His teaching on the assembly was encouraging. Can you hear me okay, Dick? You better? Okay. Our assembling together is indeed a refuge from the world, a respite from the cares of this life, and a taste of heaven. What Christian wouldn't rather be in the assembly than anywhere else? Not me, and I trust not any one of you. Unfortunately, his later remarks regarding attendance and COVID are somewhat troubling and personally discouraging to me personally. He said when it comes to attending services, we should forget about COVID. He asked, since the brethren in Hebrews 10 were being persecuted to the death, why are we complaining about a virus with a low potential for causing death? I find his remarks somewhat discouraging because of my personal situation. It was, continues to be hard for Donna and me to miss services. We would much rather be here. To hear a brother make light of a very difficult decision on our part is disheartening. We are not complaining about the SARS-CoV-2 virus. I find his remarks troubling considering the decision that was made by the men last March and confirmed in August. We decided to allow, without judgment or question, any member of this congregation to limit their attendance on account of COVID-19. My concern, since others have made similar remarks from the pulpit, is that some of the men may have changed their mind about that decision. By way of reminder, I'll now read a few quick excerpts from the coronavirus page in the members area of the soundteaching.org. Keep in mind that the purpose of this page, in part, was and is to inform the congregation of our decision. On March the 15th, it says, each person should recognize their liberty to determine for themselves, with no judgment on the part of any other member, whether it is best for them to refrain from coming to services. There's no right or wrong decision here, only what fits each individual's needs and vulnerabilities. And then August 16th, upon resuming full services, if you are still unwilling to attend due to health concerns during the pandemic, no one will question that decision. And then finally, there was a summary on March 24th. Finally, remember the decision of the men at the last meeting. Our decision has been to allow those who in good conscience feel the need to assemble to do so. At the same time, those who are sufficiently concerned about the pandemic should feel free to exercise their liberty to stay home. We are a family and should always express our love and understanding toward one another. This is Stan saying, I love you all. And I am personally intolerant of any efforts of any member of Westside to be divisive in this difficult time. Now, in all fairness to Rick, I know he has no intention of being divisive. We all know that. But sometimes such statements can be unintentionally divisive by separating us into two camps. We who are strong and attend in spite of COVID, and those who are weak and do not. I hope none of us actually think this way. We are not we's and them's in this congregation. We are us, all of us, all together. I did ask Rick what he meant, and this is what he told me. He said, I was not passing judgment as much as I was trying to encourage brethren to analyze from a different perspective. I can respect the decision for some to abstain from the assembly as their situations may be more vulnerable than others. Logic dictates, since he respects the decision of some, that he does not respect the decision of others. This is borne out in subsequent correspondence when such others are characterized as struggling Christians who choose to fear health concerns over assembling as commanded. He says it is possible that some Christians may be leading or putting their ox in the ditch. This would mean they are lying about their reason, in this case COVID-19 concerns, for missing services. Characterizing fear as the reason as opposed to exercising precautions on account of valid concerns could also be a sign of weakness among these struggling absent brethren. Now listen carefully, because if this was said about me, my ears would be burning. Some, if not all, of these concerns may be true that Rick has. So I actually agree with Rick and others if they are saying the following. Struggling Christians in our congregation who allow fear or any other reason to lead them to lie to their brethren or themselves about the true reason for their absence are in sin. The problem is identifying such a one so we can lead them to repentance. But this is not the issue that I'm concerned with. Okay? I'm not concerned about what Rick said. The issue is assuming there may be such as these and passing judgment on them in advance. As we have read, the men have already decided not to do this. we have decided not to judge or question the motives of any whose reason for limiting their attendance is related to their concerns for COVID-19. That being the case, we must trust them. That's a difficult thing to do, I know. Maybe difficult to understand, but that's what we must do. Therefore, when we speak this way from the pulpit, we may actually be in defiance of the decision of the men. It brings to question the considered discussion, agreement, and decision of the men concerning these matters. If any brother now has questions, misgivings, or a change of heart with the decision that he has earlier agreed to, he should bring it here in this meeting before the men, before addressing it publicly, so that we may hear his concerns, consider them, and decide how to proceed. It might be that we would agree, but it needs to be decided here. Furthermore, let us reserve the expressing of personal opinions regarding the dangers of, statistics related to, and studies concerning this disease to our men's meeting. Offering up such opinions from the pulpit is an effort at appealing to unsourced authority to give weight to arguments or statements made before the congregation. Mark Twain once said, "Facts are stubborn things, but statistics are pliable." What I'm asking the men to do, time permitting, we may not have time today, but it might be something we want to think about and come back to. You may not want to do it at all, and that's fine. All I can do is ask. But what I'm asking the men to do is, first of all, discuss whether we are still in agreement as to the decision that we made last March. Okay? We need to revisit that and make sure we're all on the same page. Second, if we are still in agreement, let us discuss whether or not, and if so, how and why we should address this subject from the pulpit in the future. Okay? Third, if we decide not to speak of it from the pulpit, let us decide how to handle any future occurrence to the contrary. And finally, fourth, let us agree to bring our concerns about previous decisions to the men's business meeting before examining them before the congregation. And let it be known, I am not talking about any brother's right or responsibility to speak the whole counsel of God before the church. None of us need permission to do that. What I'm talking about is decisions we have made in this meeting. If there is a change of heart, we need to discuss them here, okay, before bringing them before the congregation. In closing, I want to affirm my love for Rick and all the brethren. I do not know Rick very well yet, but I have no doubts concerning his faith and his love for God and the brethren. Everything he has said on this subject was well-intentioned and motivated by concern for the brethren. What he has spoken publicly speaks volumes of his character. I'm happy that he and his family have joined us. What I have said is not an accusation of sin on his part, not at all. I certainly did not mean to offend him or any of you. Again, if I have said anything amiss, I apologize in advance. Please correct me. For I harbor no resentment or ill will toward any. I just want us all to continue in faith the best we can so we can get through this thing. Okay? And if I or any of you do not happen to make it, let me assure you with all my heart, I do want to see your faces, and I want you to see my face when the Lord comes to take us to our home above. So I hope I didn't hurt feelings. I just want to make sure we're all on the same page. Okay? Now, before I turn the floor back over to Josh, someone didn't understand something I said or has a specific question about something I said, feel free to do that. We don't want to debate that right now. That would be in the discussion whenever we have the discussion. Anybody?
Can you make that statement again? Because I had you said that, and then I had a thought pass through my head, which made me lose track of what you said, that last part.
That very last statement that I made?
Yes.
The last statement is, I wanted to know if anybody has a question about something I said in my letter that you didn't hear or didn't understand that you'd like to address right now before I give the floor back to Josh. If it's something you want to debate, let's save that for discussion. Because that's certainly appropriate. We could do that. You may disagree with something I said. But if you don't understand something I said, please feel free to ask me right now. And if anybody wants a copy of this so you can read it later or study it, just let me know and I can give it to you. No? Yes?
I would like.
Okay. I'll probably, I don't have copies with me right now, Josh, but I'll probably just like email them to you.
Okay. All right. I'll get you my updated email.
Sure. It's not current online?
No, sadly. I should have updated a long time ago. Sorry.
Okay.
I would like a copy as well.
Sure, Rick. Anybody else? Yep. Hold on, let me look at Rick. Josh, Rick. Dick, anybody else?
Earl.
Okay, Earl. Thank you, Earl. Okay. There you go.
Thank you.
Josh. Yes.
Well, I didn't know if you had anything to say before you called on him.
Go ahead.
All right. So, Dennis mentioned facts being facts and statistics being pliable. Another thing that's annoyingly pliable is language. So, when we all said that we weren't going to judge, like that was said at one point, we weren't going to judge somebody if they felt like they could come. We meant that with a definition of the word judge and not with every definition of the word judge. And so this is a situation like Romans 14 and 1 Corinthians 8. And it's completely appropriate for a Corinthian to say, well, I have judged that this person who says they can't eat meat doesn't have a full understanding of the liberty that we have here. And I might choose to have discussions with them about that and try to help them get to a position where they have a better knowledge of the truth. Now, there's also the state where somebody has a full well knowledge of the truth, right? And they're like, yes, I know that logically I should be able to eat that meat, but I still can't. Right? And that's a different situation. But in either of those situations, I wouldn't be trying to convince that person from the pulpit. I'd be having a conversation with that person one-on-one, or maybe even a group conversation or something like that. But it wouldn't be something that I would address in that manner for a couple of reasons. One, it's very unlikely to be effective. And two, it's very easy to be misunderstood or incomplete. This situation is slightly different because we don't have the Apostle Paul going, yep, it sure is okay to eat that meat. And we've all dealt with that ourselves. I know people that have come to church with fevers who were obviously contagious with a disease because they didn't feel comfortable not coming to church. I know other people who think that was sinfully negligent in the safekeeping of other people. Right? But it's in Romans 14 and 1 Corinthians 8. That's where it is. Because we're not going to go find another verse in the Bible that's really, really sharp to that point. And so, then you get to the question of, alright, well, what if you're not obviously sick? What if it's a precautionary thing? What if you've undergone chemotherapy? No one can catch your chemotherapy. But you're at a much greater risk of catching something else. You have no way of knowing if anyone else even has a disease. But we've let people make those decisions. And so what do we mean by not judging? We don't mean that we don't each have our own individual judgments. We don't mean that we're not going to sit here and think to ourselves something like, just an example, man, I think that Dennis and Donna ought to come to both of the worships in class on Sunday, right? We might have that thought. I might even talk to Dennis and say, Dennis, here are my thoughts and here's why I think you know you ought to still go and do that. But what I meant when I agreed to not judging or not casting judgment was that I was not going to have a belief that Dennis was in sin for having made that decision. And so, like I said before, I might have a conversation with Dennis to try to convince him of something that I think would be wiser. But I wouldn't, from the pulpit, say that it was wrong. And I wouldn't, from the pulpit, even discuss the wisdom of it, because it's just not the appropriate place.
And as far as the judgment, I second that. That's what I meant when we said not judge, as far as it being a sinful, not just the thought of disagreement or such. Yes? Josh.
I struggle with formulating the question. Are you saying that if the Bible does speak on an issue, and a brother happens to know another brother is having a problem with that issue, that it would be inappropriate to bring a sermon from the pulpit? Because that kind of negates like half of what I understand that Stan does, or the job of any preacher, is to address issues that are in the congregation. Are you saying that we shouldn't do that because it would be imprudent or unhelpful?
Is that directed to me, Josh?
No, that's to Justin. Okay. I took your statement well. Thank you, brother.
Okay.
Not to avoid topics entirely, it's when you bring up the topic and you speak about it, about the wisdom of individuals, and you direct it at individuals, or even try and convince individuals. Beyond broader generic statements. And so I think that a lot of folks, when they make comments in class, that's all they're doing. They're making broad generic statements. They're not directing it at this person or that person. If I went up and made a statement about it being okay to eat meat that's sacrificed to idols, and then Caroline had somebody actually offer her meat that was offered to a Hindu idol in one of her house cleaning things, and she's like, yeah, I ain't doing that. Well, I was not attacking her by making that statement, right? And so I think I'm speaking to what I would do in this situation based upon, again, like I said before, the efficacy. I think that talking with someone one-on-one about something like this is likely to be a lot more efficacious and a lot less likely to get misinterpreted or to be hurtful. That's one of the reasons I like teaching class so much better than giving sermons, is because when I say something and I stomp on someone completely by accident, and I can see it in their face, or someone makes a comment about it and asks for a point of clarity, I can immediately try and rectify the situation. The thing that I think here is hurtful is, I think the repetition here is hurtful a lot. Like, imagine for a minute that it's flat out a matter of weakness and that everyone should be coming all the time if we were all perfectly strong, right? I'm not saying that's true. I'm saying just imagine that. And imagine you're sitting there and you're the weaker brother. I'll switch back to the meat example. Imagine you're sitting there and you're the weaker brother. And just all the time, like once a week, if not three times a week, someone brings up, you know, this weakness and these weak people and this, and that would wear you, man. Even if you knew it, even if you're like, I know, but I can't. I'm trying, but I can't. It would wear on you so hard.
Let me ask that from you,
Rick. Rick, he's asking if he can go for you.
Let me just say one thing. Not once has anybody asked me my opinion on what I said. And just to clarify, I have not accused a single brother in this congregation of sin. I have not called anyone out by name. I have not judged any individual that has not been here as being doing so in sin. If I had believed that they were in sin, I would address them individually. However, does that mean that we cannot bring lessons regarding a particular topic that some may have issue with before or without knowing anyone actually having an issue with that sin? Can I not preach from the pulpit about eating of meat or not eating of meat in an effort to educate without condemning? My purpose and my plan for the entire message was simply to offer perspective and getting others to look at things from a different perspective. And if they believe they are doing something out of fear for the wrong thing, they can choose in themselves to make the change. I am not calling out anyone in this congregation to be involved in sin. That does not mean that I will not preach about what we should do as Christians. I will never shy away from preaching the whole truth. Period.
What Justin described was something that I don't think describes anybody who has ever taught anything from the pulpit. I mean, that sounded like just flat out full-on, full-frontal assault, minus any resemblance of love. And I don't know anybody that has said anything in the last year that has not come from a position of the deepest love. And so it's troubling to me that people feel that way about the brothers here, and then kind of actually wouldn't have thought of this perspective until he, Brother Hightower, spoke of it, but that people haven't been approached about that. What is that? If somebody is offended by somebody saying something, it needs to be addressed. It sounds like there's been a lot of offense and no addressing of it. So I'm a bit perplexed here, but what you described, brother, is not something that's been loving. And that should be addressed if that's an issue. So, thank you.
Yes. I think it's a couple things need to happen here as far as our perceptions and such. And Rick, I want you to know, number one, that I acknowledge what you said in that regard. And as far as asking your opinion about it, most everybody here, I think, wasn't aware of Dennis's reaction to what you had to say until today. So wouldn't have had an opportunity to talk to you about it. And no one's doubting your character or your intent. In fact, Dennis didn't do that. But one of the things, I kind of look at this from a practical aspect as a preacher and one who is greatly desiring of keeping our congregation together and unified during a horrific difficulty that we're gone through. And so I want y'all to think about this in a little bit more of a practical manner. Is that, no, we should never accept declaring anything less than the whole counsel of God. I have dealt a number of times in my sermons about the very idea of excusing my actions, or someone excusing their actions, using the pandemic as an excuse that's not legitimate. I can go back and I can cite those articles and those sermons where I've made that point. What we're talking about right now is a small group of Christians who are not coming to every assembly at this time, that because the majority of everyone is coming. So I'm very encouraged in general by this, by the reaction of our congregation. I think that some of them may be a little misguided physically with regard to their physical safety by coming, would include myself in that because of my vulnerability with my suppressed immune system. The fact that I got my vaccine already is an indication that I was one of those that was most in danger if I were to contract the virus. My mom and my Aunt Tommy, Patsy, Dick, Cliffy, and Mary and Jay Dean, and Yvonne. All examples of individuals who, if they got COVID, could die from it. It's not the small mortality percentage for them doesn't apply. Now, they may not have any symptoms still, but they are the group that it's much more likely that it would cost them their lives if they were to catch it. And yet they're coming. And I'm very encouraged by that. But the ones that remain, and I don't want to make any exceptions in this regard, I'm not saying it's absolutely 100%, but with regard to the ones that remain, they legitimately have reasons to be afraid of the virus with regard to their physical welfare. And almost every single one of them that are at home and listening, or are at home and not listening, they want to be here and would be here otherwise if it were not for that one thing. And if I were to name the names and ask everyone in this congregation to say, okay, what do you think about these individuals who are not here? They say they're not here because of the pandemic, and they have these physical conditions, they're at this age. Then I trust that, and again, I'm not going to make any exceptions because I'm not going to judge the hearts of any in regard to this. They all say that they're not here because of the pandemic. But you would say to me, I'm not going to judge them in regard to that. They legitimately have concerns. That's between them and God. So the only thing that we add to that, because everyone agrees with that about those situations, is that, okay, how do we as a congregation handle this in order to teach the truth, encourage our brethren? Okay, and we just need to acknowledge and recognize that the ones who want to be here, when we talk about the pandemic, and you could, you know, think about how it's not as dangerous, or think about how, you know, other Christians in other times handle other things, then yes, that's a discouragement to them. It is. And whether they need to hear it or not, that's a matter of opinion. But brethren, this is what I want you to recognize. We made that decision as a congregation for the purpose of unity. At that time, thinking it was going to be fairly short. We didn't know how long it was going to take. But let's keep this together and not be divisive over it, not be split over it. I'm not saying it's anyone's fault for division. I'm just saying let's try not to. And let's say if someone feels, you know, we know that forsaking the assembly is sinful. If someone is of a mind that this is not forsaking the assembly because of this, I don't think in any situation with regard to the pandemic and the people who are staying home and their condition that I can say, no, you're forsaking the assembly. I would, if I brought up every single couple, every single family, I would say, no, you've got a legitimate reason. And that's including Donna and Dennis because of Donna's health conditions as an example of that and their age. Okay, so we're going through all that process and it's not something, so what do I need to do in this time? The best thing I can do is to encourage them, which is what I strive to do. Sure, examine your heart. Make sure this is the reason. Make sure you're not forsaking the assembly. But we're not going to judge you and say you are. Because I can't. I don't have that ability. And of course, that's not what we're going to do. But I can't do that either. So what I need to do is to recognize that now it's been 9 months. Okay, it's been 9 months. There may be 6 months, 9 months left before things get to relative normalcy. But at the same time, I've been asking everyone in the congregation who is of that age, and they talked to Dick about it, because I haven't talked to him about it, get the vaccine. Because you get the two vaccines, time passes, you can still come and wear a mask and all, but now the danger's much, much less. Now you don't have to be as scared. And let's get them back. And I'm just saying that practically, number one, there are very few that are staying away because almost everybody's here. If you look at it, the ones that are staying away, either because of where they live they can't come or because of their health, they certainly have pause to be worried. And then in addition to that, the vaccine's here and people are going to start getting it. Not everybody's going to want to get it. But if the older members of this congregation who are afraid because of their health get that, then even more will be able to come. And this will begin to be a non-issue. But I, as a preacher, as I'm looking, and I'm worried, I'm not worried, in fact, I put it in that article, I'm not worried about your physical welfare. I'm worried about spiritual welfare. That's what I'm worried about. I cannot, as a preacher, say, in my mind, I might could come up with someone, but again, exceptions are not appropriate here. But as far as the ones who have expressed to me, and what I know of their physical condition or their circumstances who have expressed to me they're not coming specifically because of the pandemic and the dangers it presents to them to come and assemble because of the pandemic, I cannot say they're forsaking the assembly. And so I'm going to be careful and circumspect in how I approach it because since they are not sinning in my eyes, I don't want to be a discouragement to them. Okay? So it's not a matter. I'm hopeful and I'm there are no personal feelings of personal attacks or frustration on the part of everybody. I want this to be over with. I'm so frustrated, and every time we bring it up in the men's meeting, I get a knot in my stomach. And because the way I'm thinking of it is every time this is discussed, there's a potential for an eruption. There's a potential we might lose members, we might split as a congregation. I've seen enough of that kind of stuff. I trust you, brethren. I trust you love for one another. It won't happen. But it doesn't get that sick feeling in my stomach to go away because of that conflict. I don't have the stomach for conflict either in that regard. I'll stand up for truth. But for brethren having issues like this, it bothers me a lot. So I just ask practically, you recognize that we're in the home stretch. Now that's not weeks. I understand that. I wish it was, but it's not. But the things are changing, and the brethren that we have that are staying home, in my mind, if not all, then the large, large majority of those brethren we can trust have a legitimate cause for being away, and they're not forsaking the assembly. And I mean, again, you're talking about age, you're talking about medical conditions and situations and circumstances, and I understand what forsaking is. It's consistently determining you're not going to be here when you could. But we have, and I could go through all the processes of the examples that we've given. We've had people who have not come when I would come because of bad weather. We've had people not come when I would come because of some situation arises with work or with some circumstances. We had, you know, I was talking with Josh about this. We've had situations whenever I was in had kids at home, whenever the kids got sick, partly it was because, well, it all because of my job, but it was a reality of my job, is that only one of us stayed home with the kids. If a family got, if there's someone sick in the family, the ones who were sick in the family, they stayed home, the rest of them went. That's just the way it was in our family, and that's not the way it is with every family here. But I'm not going to judge that as a forsaking of the assembly. So there are examples and there are exceptions and there are excuses that we've noted as being legitimate. And we agree to say that we're not going to judge this example as being illegitimate and leave it up to the Lord to deal with it.
I think we need to have some serious discussions as a congregation about what a command is, for one thing, because I've heard some things that are a bit contradictory. But we need to understand what a command is, the difference between apples and oranges. And that's not intended to be demeaning to anybody, but there's been some apples and orange comparisons here. And we also need to understand or come to an understanding about our ability to excuse maybe where God, it hasn't. And I'm not saying at this point anybody's done anything wrong.
Josh, do you think there are those in our congregation who are
forsaken? I am not saying at this point that anyone has done anything wrong. I'm saying we need to all get on the same page so we can have unity.
But I think what the issue is that based on what you have said, many believe that you think that. That there are those forsaken. Conversations we've had, things you said in these meetings, and things you said from your lessons have, at the very least, implied that you feel there are those forsaking the assembly because of this virus. Do you believe that? Because you say, I'm not saying it, I'm saying it, but you're doing everything you can but say it, and I think that's some of the issue that we're having here.
In my email to Dennis, one of the things that I mentioned to Dennis was that I was not necessarily saying that anyone at Westside was guilty of this particular topic. Right. But I did want to at least mention it for the sake of brethren across the globe, because these lessons, these teachings go to members of the church the world over.
Right.
Through our web press or by via online. And far be it for me to restrain from speaking on a subject that may actually encourage a brother or sister that's at home that is more worried about someone that does not need to worry. For instance, I am O negative. I have probably zero chance of getting the virus ever, at least according to some statistics and reports or whatever. It doesn't bother me at all. Get it or not get it, I'm not that vulnerable. I can make a different decision about certain things than somebody else, like, say, Dick, right here next to me. It would be a very lethal thing for him. I completely understand that. And yet he's here. Why? Why do some people choose to accept the risks involved and some do not? My mention in the letter was simply to say that I was encouraging those that may look at their situation and go, is it worth the risk? And they choose not to. That's something that they need to come to the understanding of. I am not saying Dennis or anyone else in this congregation is specifically in guilt of this.
Right.
I've never said that.
And I completely understand that. And to adjust what, you know, about the whole love thing, I don't think anybody is accusing anybody of not being loving. You know, I mentioned in the class a few weeks ago, it was the last class I taught before Rick started. You know, there's a difference between tact and being loving. You know, you can do something loving, but not necessarily have the tact to handle it in a delicate way, if you will.
It would be judgment if I were to go to Dennis and say, hey, brother, I think you're in sin.
Right.
That would be judgment.
Right. Right. I understand that. And you could even say that some shouldn't have jumped to that conclusion and taken it that way. But that's kind of what we're discussing here, is being careful and aware of these things so that we can have that unity and understanding what we mean by judgment. And if we are in a position in the pulpit of whether teaching a class or having a sermon, to be, when we are trying to encourage the brethren in a legitimate thing to question, it is legitimate to remind those, is this something that you are doing because of, you know, you've looked at it and you believe it's a true threat and it's not forsaking the assembly, or using it as an excuse. That's something that is legitimate to ask of individuals. But it's, and you know, quickly to the command part, we all agree that not forsaking the assembly is a command. It's the application of that command. And when we talk about the application of that command here as far as the virus, it's a matter of judgment in this issue, which is to the point Justin was making, comparing it to the eatings of meat. And so if it's a matter of judgment, we need to be careful how we, if we're going to preach about that, which again, it's perfectly fine to preach about not forsaking the assembly in any circumstance from the pulpit, because that's part of preaching the whole counsel of God. But when we're in a pandemic and making an application to the pandemic, we need to be very careful of how we put that and how we come across, and if it's something that is and can be implied as judgment to those that are not coming. And I think that, again, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like that is the issue here. It sounds like you know, at least for Rick's specific situation, he was not doing that, but it was something that some perhaps took to that level, and that's something that we can, you know, come together on and figure out that those differences. Does that make sense? And so, you know.
But I do want to again say, no, Rick, never refrain from preaching, declaring the whole council.
Right, certainly not.
There's no one that's going to say that that's the case. I preach on forsaking the assembly, and we'll do so during the pandemic, and have made those principles known. And just that there's a difference between missing an assembly and forsaking the assembly. And if we make that, and again, it's obvious often, but I just don't feel wise enough to say that I can ascertain in the circumstance of any individual at this time that what they're doing is forsaking, which is why I was in agreement with the decision that I'm not going to judge that as forsaking. And that's really what the principle is. Right. Are they forsaking the assembly or not? And when I have men and women who are at home right now and have been home for the most part for the last 9 months who love God and want dearly to be here and are missing terribly not coming, and they do have legitimate concerns about their life's welfare, then I'm not going to be able to say in my heart that they're forsaking the assembly. So I'm not going to judge them on that.
And to that point, some self-awareness is needed as far as your speaking ability. You know, how you prepare your lessons, and are they written out? You know, Dennis, for example, he did not want to misspeak at all. He wanted to be clear on what he was saying in this delicate situation. So he wrote it out and read it. And I very much appreciate doing that because it, again, limits the misunderstanding. When I'm preaching a sermon, if there's a point that I want to make that is unique perhaps, or it's something that I can, you know, talk about from, you know, one-on-one to somebody and clearly state my position, but when I get into the pulpit and I'm, you know, nerves a little bit, you know, you've got the audience looking at you, and it's something that I absolutely know is important to not mess up because it's a legitimate point to my lesson, it's important to the structure of the argument, I will write that paragraph out and read it. With the rest of the stuff, it's outlines and I speak. But sometimes when we do that, when we speak, we don't come across in a way that we want to. We've all talked from the pulpit and said things that later on we thought, well, that really didn't make any sense, or it came out in a way that we didn't want it to, or came out in a way that we hadn't really rehearsed in the way that we thought we would. And again, with these delicate situations, again, be self-aware. Also, if it's someone, you know, we all know those that have really kept to themselves about their opinions of this virus. You know, there have been wide-ranging opinions all over the place, different ends of the spectrum. And if it's someone that has been very vocal on one end or the other, you know, that's the things that you say are going to be interpreted a certain way based on all the other stuff you've said and how people know you feel about that situation. And those are all things that we need to consider when speaking publicly on these issues. Yes, Justin.
I gave a sermon a long, long time ago. I don't even know how many years ago. A long, long time ago. And one of the challenges of giving a sermon is that you're broadcasting to an entire group. And I gave the sermon two particular people in mind. I thought to myself, these two people need to hear this point to help correct an aspect of their lives. I had already tried to talk to each of them individually. It didn't work. I thought something more subtle, more broadcast would work better. But it was still really unlikely to work. And so I gave the sermon, and I think it didn't work at all. Not even a little bit. It did, however, drastically affect one other person in the congregation. Drastically affected them. Changed their life forever. Was it just me? No, not arrogant enough to think that. But it acted as a catalyst and drastically changed their life. What that made me think from then on, whenever I was preparing a sermon, was to actually think around the entire room of people I'd be talking to and think about the impact that I might be having on those people. Because I didn't want to teach in such a way that I had more of a negative effect than a positive effect. Now, I don't think anything I taught in that sermon was false, and I don't think anything that I taught in that sermon caused anyone to sin. But it had an overall negative effect. For completely illogical reasons. And that's one of the challenges that I come across. That was harsh. I'll take that back. I won't say for completely illogical reasons. For reasons that I don't understand logically. And so I looked at that and I went, man, I need to think about other people's emotions more, and I'm really bad at it. I'm really, really bad at thinking about other people's emotions. And I've become more reserved in my speech over time because of that, because I don't want to inadvertently hurt Dorothy again. I don't want to inadvertently hurt Caroline again. I don't want to inadvertently hurt Shirley again. There were these people that I was hurting unintentionally, repeatedly, with no clue that I was doing it beforehand. And there were men in that list too. Those are just three people I happen to think of. So, I try to imagine, and it's hard, I try to imagine how somebody going to feel. What are going to be the emotional ramifications of me saying thus or such, whatever I'm going to say. And that's more what I was trying to get to, Josh, is how it feels. If you had somebody that couldn't eat meat, and they heard three times a month about how it was okay to eat meat, and it was mentioned barbecue potlucks after services or something, I don't know, that even if that person never got tempted to violate their conscience and go do that, that it would still be an emotional drain on them, it would still work on them. And that doesn't mean that anything the person said was wrong. It didn't mean they didn't do it out of love. It didn't even mean it was bad. It was just an unintended consequence. And that's what I think about. I think about that unintended consequence because, in a weird way, we're unfortunately in the situation where it actually makes sense to preach that it's okay to eat meat and then talk about a barbecue. Because we say it's perfectly okay for a bunch of people to come every time. As much as we talk about, might it be a sin for people to not come? There is the complete polar opposite, and as Josh mentioned, trying to figure out what I think about all this will be challenging, because I haven't told any of y'all. But there is the polar opposite. There are people who think the people that show up every time are sinning. I'm not saying there are any at Westside, but on the planet there are. There are both of those extremes. But when I get up from the pulpit and I say, hey, you know what? You need to consider whether or not you're making an excuse, whether or not you're saying, well, you know, I could do this and that, and maybe, you know, are you trying to be wishy-washy, or are you actually having a thoughtful, conscience-driven decision? But then we're still having the 11 o'clock service. We're still having the barbecue. We could choose to not have the barbecue. We could choose to just have the 9 o'clock service. And that would reduce the number. But there's no point. Because at some point, it is between the Lord and the person. We have people stay home all the time because they're sick, or because they might be sick, or because they might be contagious, or four other people have the disease in my house, maybe I have it too. I don't want to go and get a bunch of folks sick. And we let them make that decision. And it's appropriate to say from the pulpit, hey, are you making that decision for a valid reason? I think it's just unwise to make that point 3-4 times a month. And that's really the thing that sticks with me the most, is that I would feel uncomfortable doing it so often because it feels like a beat down, even though it's not at all.
And I'm, you know, again, I'm learning as chairman, but what Dennis wanted us to do, and I think it is legitimate, especially that first one, to at least talk about for a second today.
Real quick before we actually get to that, I would like to address Rick before everybody and reassure him if it is at all possible. The reason why I felt at liberty to share his private correspondences is because I was not in disagreement with what he said. What he said to me in the email was actually good, and I even said it in my letter that I would agree with it. The issue is not that. The issue is kind of like what Justin's talking about. We got a very unique situation here because of the decision that we made in March. We cannot assume the Lord allows us liberty to decide for ourselves whether or not we can attend or not attend any particular assembly. Okay? We assume that the liberty exists. That's the way it was worded in the March 15th paragraph that I read. And so the unique situation here is because of the pandemic, what the men decided was is that we would not judge or even question anyone's absence if the reason, if asked, that they gave for their absence is because they have personal concerns about COVID-19. And the reason why we decided to do that, that's what Justin was saying, so that we wouldn't discourage them for what they're doing and make them think that what they're doing is wrong, that we think what they're doing is wrong. They need to think about it, change their mind, and come to services anyway. I don't think that's what we're doing here, but that's the way, if you're sitting at home listening, it's the way that you could very well take it. Right. And we don't want to do that since we have already said we wouldn't. Okay? I'm not saying that it's wrong to speak from the pulpit. I'm just raising the question, if we do decide to what extent? You know, for example, one thing we haven't done is gone to people one by one and asked them, is this the reason you're not coming? Wouldn't be anything wrong with that. But we've assumed that that's the reason.
I have gone to most of them.
Okay. But even then, if there are those, like, and I like his example, I don't know where he got it, if it's original with him or if he borrowed it, if there are those who are dragging their ox back into the ditch so they can use that as an excuse, we've got a real problem. Mm-hmm. And if that came to light, that that's the case with Brother Smith, we need to deal with Brother Smith, because he's in trouble. The problem is, because of this decision that we've made, we can't just go start, you know, judging people without cause. It's our job to judge one another. I'm not saying that. 1 Corinthians 5:12 clearly says we don't judge those that are without. That's God's responsibility. We are to judge one another because we're the hope we have from each other to keep us from sin, to catch us when we're wrong, catch us when we fall, and put us back on our feet.
By the way, in regard to the language that's on the website that was quoted by Dennis, just know this. We made decisions, but that language is exclusively my language as I attempted in my imperfect way to explain what the decisions were and the rationale behind them and such. So if there's anything that's out of place or that you would disagree with regard to the language, then I'm the one you would need to talk to because I'm the one that wrote it. You know, Dennis didn't write that, I did, but he quoted me several times, and it was just, you know, this has been tough on a lot of us, but the toughest part to me is to be both diplomatic and truthful and reasonable with regard to the way I'm handling everything that falls upon me, more or less clerically, to deal with these kinds of issues. And so there may be some things said in that that are written in that that may not be 100% accurate or in your mind may not completely represent what you thought we were talking about, but that's what I understood and what I wrote.
So are we still in agreement as to the decision that was made in March, or are those that disagree? And when I say in agreement to the not judging those that are not at services because of the virus, to the, again, to the, not just the disagreement, but judgment being to the extent that saying they are in sin for not coming to services. Is it, are we all in agreement to that?
Say that again.
Are we in agreement that we're not going to judge those that are not coming to services because of the virus? And when I say judge in that they are in sin, saying that they are in sin because they are not coming.
I still agree with you.
Why are you looking at me?
Because I feel you've been inconsistent in this, Josh, in some of our conversation.
No.
I just want to make sure we're on the same page.
And you have never heard my conversation with you.
Well, it's yes or no. Do you agree? Now, in this moment,
that everyone who's not coming is in sin?
No,
that's not what they're saying. They're saying that we are not going to pass judgment on those that choose not to attend.
If that's agreed now, or was what was an agreement then, under that wording, I'm not ever going to withhold my ability to pass judgment on somebody. So, I guess that makes me in disagreement. I mean, if God has said a thing, which is why I said we need to study. If God has said a thing, and I again am not saying that anyone that is home right now is wrong, because that is individual and case by case.
Well, that's what we're asking.
I think that's what he's trying to say.
That's what I'm trying to say.
The specific
in the matter of judgment of the individual, their judgment call is that it would be wrong for them to attend just as much as it would be wrong for them not to attend because of how they're looking at it, whether it be by passing it or by getting it themselves. They're choosing to do that out of love of the brethren. Not that they're forsaking the assembly. I think that's the issue here, is that we're not saying that the person that's staying home is therefore forsaking the assembly. And that is not what I was saying earlier either.
Okay. Those aren't the reasons that Stan explained that certain people felt, but okay. But I reserve the right to pass judgment where judgment is due.
Well, we all do. And okay. That's, we mentioned that, yes.
So what's the issue?
So, I don't think I've heard anyone say anything here today that contradicts what we said before. I do want to make this point, and we've touched on it barely, but just to hit the nail on the head, people do need to check implying things on others' behalves and the emotions they have when things are said. Because to be clear, most of what I've heard from the pulpit has not been somebody casting judgment on someone. It's been somebody saying, hey, you need to go double check the judgment you're casting on yourself. And that's always a solid call on any topic whatsoever. Always make sure that you haven't, you know, that you haven't led yourself down the garden path. And so I just wanted that said that, you know, sometimes we say something like, well, and I think they just took it wrong. Well, okay, then those people should work on not taking things wrong. And then that just makes life better. As far as the immediate topic, I don't think that we've changed on that statement. But if we say that someone's not judging, but asking someone to double check their judgment of themselves, is something that causes more discouragement than encouragement, that could be a follow-on question.
Motion that we do some study on it and reconvene at another time.
Anybody second that motion?
Second.
I'll save it.
All right.
Yeah, we could save it for the next business meeting. If that's I don't see a pressing issue here.
Okay.
I just wanted us to consider it.
Okay. Well, then. What Dennis was asking us to do, that first one, we are in agreement about the decision in March. We've established that. And so study and think about the other three. Discuss whether we should allow such remarks from the pulpit in the future. Not decide how to handle any future occurrences contrary to this decision. And agree to bring this and similar matters before the men before bringing them to the congregation. So I ask that you study up on those, think about those. And then when we come back next month, we can discuss those and continue our conversation. Anybody object to that? Okay. Any new business?
I have one new item, but not to be discussed today. We have certainly exhausted our time limit for today. However, I do believe that much study is needed in this particular topic because I believe sin has occurred. And this is in regards to the Lord's Supper. Last week, we had the Austins in attendance with us in the morning hour, but they got here just after the partaking of the Lord's Supper. They were hoping to have been able to partake of the Lord's Supper, and it is my understanding about his understanding on the Lord's Supper issue that he believes he must be in an assembly to partake of the Lord's Supper. However, since we had already partaken of the Lord's Supper, it was mentioned to them that they could partake of the elements if they felt comfortable and do so in either the class or the next worship hour. I don't know if class was mentioned, but I'm just saying take it at their convenience, basically, because we would not set aside a second time for them to partake. This poses two problems in my mind. Either we cause them to forsake their understanding of partaking of the Lord's Supper, or two, we sin by not waiting for one another in partaking of the Lord's Supper. Because 1 Corinthians 11:33 says we are to wait for one another. If we do not do that, and some partake before others, that presents a problem. I believe that we need to study this out, and we need to have a better understanding of what we are to do the next time this issue comes up, so that we don't cause someone to sin unintentionally.
Anybody? Yes, Dick.
Just the old business, perhaps. Here we have that oil and gas lease pending, and I don't know if everybody knows it or not yet. So I was going to look into that, and I did call them, and I couldn't get a hold of them. I found other things. And anyway, as far as any of the offers, they've always taken them back and rescinded.
Yeah.
All the oil leases that they signed, and they were the reason able to rescind it because it got just the offer is subject to final approval by the total A&P USA, whatever.
Right.
And so let everybody know, without going a whole lot of detail, I could go another hour.
Yeah, I mean, that's my fault. I meant to mention that, and I just forgot about it. But yeah, they did rescind their offer, so that oil and gas thing is done and over. Ended up not being anything that we were able to deal with anyway. Anything else?
Just one really small thing. After the incident last month with the baptistry, I think we should seriously look at getting a new pump for the baptistry. I can price how much they cost, but I think we just got one that's made for like a spa. It'd be perfect. That pump in there has got to be 50-something years old. And It's something we don't think about until something happens.
Can you get with Josh on that to get a quote and price?
It's definitely something we should probably look at getting. Right. And it's something nobody ever thinks about until something happens, and then, the pump don't work.
Maybe figure out a way to get the drain working again.
Well, and even if we had a decent pump that you could backwash, and we could lower the low, the thing in minutes instead of hours.
Yeah, just don't let the preacher work it again.
Well, that's already.
No, but I'm just saying it's not the first time it happened, and we'll probably won't be the last time it happened. And that pump just does not do the job we needed to do anymore. Okay. Just like I said, we don't think about it until something does happen. Everybody's like, oh yeah, that pump, that one.
All right, gentlemen, appreciate it.